Welcome to DESI Startups Meet Bulb, Deep Tech Talk. My name is Lawrence and I am your host. In this format, we will talk to exciting founders from the world of science. We will get an exciting insight of their work and how science can make our lives easier and better. You don't have to be worried. The content is easy to understand, even for non-scientists. Sit back and enjoy the view of what's possible. Welcome to our Deep Tech podcast. Today, we're diving into the fascinating intersection of science, technology, and entrepreneurship. I'm thrilled to welcome three exceptional guests. Professor Dr. Franz Kärntner, one of the world's leading researchers in ultrafast lasers, professor at the University of Hamburg and MIT, and co-founder and managing director of Cycle GmbH. Welcome. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you here. Second, Tim Bode, experienced business angel, focusing on technology-driven startups and an early investor in Cycle. All right.
Thank you. Welcome.
And third of all, Genscha Shahin, head of investment at IFB Innovationsstarter Fonds Hamburg. Welcome.
I'm happy to be here.
Maybe introduce yourself a little bit more. Franz, would you like to start?
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. And so I'm a professor at the University of Hamburg and I lead a research group at DESI in ultrafast laser physics and also X-ray sources. And my career started off actually as an electrical engineer, Technical University of Munich. And then I did a postdoc at MIT, where I still worked more in quantum optics. And then I got more interested in ultrafast lasers, and I went to ETH Zurich for a habilitation, and then went back to MIT as a visiting professor. Then I went to Karlsruhe as a full professor for electrical engineering. But then I got an interesting offer. It was 2000 around, so the optical communications market was booming. And so I got an offer at MIT and went back there and stayed there for 10 years. So boom actually never came. So there was a bubble, dot-com bubble, famous, in 2000. And we started to work on free electron lasers. And that's what brought me finally here back to Hamburg in 2011.
Okay. So we will go on a deep dive later on what actually you're doing. But for the start, Tim, maybe would you like to introduce yourself as well?
Sure, Tim Bode here, born and raised in Hamburg, where Cycle is also born and raised. I actually have a business background, mainly in finance. And I have been investing into startups since 2009, built up a portfolio of about 30 companies, of which I think 8 are still existent. And yeah, that's about it for me.
Thank you. Genscha?
Yeah, Genscha Shahin, born and raised in Berlin, studied there at the Technical University of Berlin, industrial engineering, started my career as a consultant for 5-6 years, then switched the industry to private equity, went to Munich for 3 years, and then came back to Hamburg as an investment manager here to this company. And since 4 years, I'm happy to lead our venture capital team.
Thank you. So how did you all meet? So we have two investors here and the founder. How did you meet? How did this work?
So maybe I start. It was a little bit of a special situation here. It was actually through my wife and a co-founder of Franz at that time, who asked me if I could help him and Franz to develop a business plan, a financial model, and in the end, the pitch deck, which we worked together on. So I didn't come in as an investor. I came more in as a helper, so to say, which ended up me pitching with Franz to the IFB and the High Tech Gründer Fund, the other investor here. And in the end, then came the question, well, Tim, since you're also an investor, why are you not investing? And I kind of got trapped into that, so but I didn't regret it.
Well, we at Innovationsstarter, we have two different approaches concerning how to support on a monetary-wise startups. The one is a grants program, and Cycle was one of the first startups who get these grants, the InnoRampUp, up to 150,000. And when these startups doing the right direction concerning the development, product development especially, then we are getting in touch and see, okay, if we can do together next steps with other investors. And so we get, that's how we get to know each other.
So you pitched, Tim, you pitched with Franz to...
No, it was with Damian,
with Damian Barre, okay. Yeah, it was my colleague, okay, yeah, and a co-worker. And so we wanted to commercialize technologies which we developed in our lab. Already, actually, he was already with me when I was still at MIT in 2000. And he came along, actually, with the idea that if an opportunity arises, we would start something together. Okay, and that is how we got to know you. And so in 2014, we got actually a question from a Chinese institute whether we develop a, which I explained later a little bit more, a timing distribution system similar to what we came up with in our research and was implemented here in the European X-FAL. Yeah, and then we thought this is a good start to found it, but we need a little bit of capital to make the whole thing a little bit more stable and being able to hire those 5-6 people, yeah, to build the first system. Okay. That is how it started.
And what convinced you in the end to join this journey? So,
well, for me it was, since I didn't come in as an investor at first, I had pretty good trust in them explaining to me as a non-engineer or non-physicist on what the products that they're planning to develop, what kind of solution they're targeting. And then basically I knew that the Heidrich Gründer Fund and the IFB do a very thorough technical due diligence as well. So that gave me basically the comfort that I could invest in here as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and we have a mission to support highly innovative ideas getting realized and commercialized somehow. And we were convinced of the high degree of the innovation. In the first step, of course, it just addresses a very small address to the market, more a scientific market, but the technology is able to develop products for more industrialized products, so which is much higher than the first step cycle was addressing. And that was what we are aiming for.
Okay. And now I think it's time to understand, yeah, trying to understand what you're exactly doing.
Exactly. So around 2005, people started to think about big free electron lasers, which are used for making molecular movies. That means measure how, and actually spatially resolved on an atomic scale and temporally resolved on a femtosecond timescale, which I explain in a minute, how molecules work. And so these machines are 3 kilometers long. And they produce very short X-ray pulses, 10 femtosecond duration. So 1 second, we all understand how 1 second works and how you feel about it. A microsecond is a millionth of a second, okay? And a nanosecond is a billionth of a second. And that we also understand because handies, the electromagnetic waves, a handy transmit to a station to make your phone calls, that's with wavelengths or periods that have 1 nanosecond duration, so a billion cycles per second, okay? And then a million times shorter than that, there is actually optical waves. So the visible light here, the period of visible light is on a few femtosecond timescale, okay? And so motions of molecules are on the order of 100 femtoseconds. That is where light flies, crosses. Light is very fast, as we know, speed of, yeah, light. Okay. And it crosses just a hair, okay, in 100 femtoseconds. And on that motion, molecules work. So when you excite the molecule with an optical pulse, at least some of them start to move. And then you do flash photography. So you start, you trigger that motion, and then comes the short X-ray flash with a certain delay. And the delay needs to be very precise, also femtoseconds. Okay. And then the old days, all this timing in this equipment was done with microwaves, so those which are in cell phones. And the nanosecond is very long. It's very hard to find a marker in that nanosecond which is stable to femtoseconds. But lasers can produce very short pulses. So ultra-fast lasers can produce naturally 100 femtosecond pulses. And we have developed techniques how to split that by a factor of 1,000 so we can do attosecond short measurements of pulses, And we also developed a whole suite of technologies, how to measure pulses relative to each other with that precision, or a pulse within a microwave signal to that precision. And now that opens up the possibility to time these huge machines or the subsystems with that precision. Timing is also very important, also in optical communications, on the internet, when data packets switch around. But typically that's nanosecond. But they also get constantly more precise. So they one gets sub nanosecond to be able to put more data on one channel. Okay. So this timing technology is very important. And the free electron laser wanted to have very advanced technology, six orders of magnitude better than what was possible before, and we could implement that. Then that is also what brought me here to DESY, because there's a European XFEL, which was an accelerator was developed by DESY. And there the DESY groups implemented that technology. And yeah, and then came outside institutes and wanted to have that too. And we are convinced that this technology finds its way in also commercial markets, because there's a pressure comes slowly down to be more and more precise in similar ways. Okay.
Can you give an example for the use? Now it may be understood
how
it works, but how do you use it? Who uses your technology?
Exactly. So let's explain it on the European XFEL again. Okay. So this 3 kilometer long actually is an experimental station in Schönefeld. Okay. And there is an optical laser who hits a molecule to do some motion.
Press start.
Exactly. Press start. Here on campus, already many microseconds before, an electron bunch is generated and accelerated in a 2 kilometer long accelerator. To very high speeds, and then it is wiggled by magnets to produce this X-ray pulse in another 1 kilometer. Okay, and this X-ray pulse, which has been generated a long time before because it has to fly through these 3 kilometers, has to be exactly what we discussed before, a few hundred femtoseconds or 10 femtoseconds in relation to this triggering laser pulse. So we have to synchronize that laser that actually starts the electron package very precisely to that other laser that starts the molecule. And that we do. Okay, so we actually can also build very stable ultra-fast lasers now, or we buy them. And then we make those modules that make the synchronization of microwave fields with that laser field, or the other laser with this laser field. And also, in order to set these lasers know of each other, you have to transmit the signal stable over time. You know, when it's winter and summer, actually the location between Schönefeld and Hamburg here contracts by actually centimeters.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and if we speak and are close to that, actually the air vibrates and femtoseconds is just 100 micron. Okay. Actually 300 nanometer to move. Okay. So even air pressure waves change the path of light. And we have a technology where we can basically pre-compensate for that. We can detect it and pre-compensate for that so that these lasers are absolutely synchronized to each other. Yeah. And can do their work.
It sounds crazy.
All the time.
So you take, the molecule to move, and then at the right moment you take the picture.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you do that with different delays. Like old flash photography from Harold Edgerton in 1960. Actually, he was in the lab where I was when I was at MIT.
Okay. Just a little bit faster.
Billion times faster.
But maybe you can explain, how do you use this technology? So moving, who needs to know how fast, what does a molecule does? So who's...
Well, for example... molecules in your body are also very attacked, for example, from UV photons and damages. Actually, that was just a measurement was done in the last 1 to 2 years at the European XFEL. So actually, your body, I think, a cell gets damaged 100 times a second.
Okay.
A lot of your cells in your body, okay? And so they need to be fixed very quickly. And there are very efficient processes how to do that. Otherwise, you would be dead in a fraction of a second, okay, everybody of us. And so that molecular mechanism, so there is actually a little molecule who changes its structure, okay, and to repair itself. And that motion was actually measured by a colleague here, Henry Chapman, and his team, and T.J. Lane. They made that measurement. It's an article in Science or Nature.
Yeah, so you help to understand, for example, how human cells work.
Exactly.
It's one of
molecules work in cells.
Wherever. Okay.
Wherever.
Okay, this is super interesting. Did you two get it from the beginning, or you're still learning?
Still learning.
Still learning, yeah.
I mean, we sent an expert in there and telling him, okay, please verify if this is all the right thing what Franz and his team is telling us. And he's writing us a report. And so we approach it this way because I did not study this topic. Heidegründungsfonds, they have more experts. They know much more. And so this helps us to understand the approach and the technology and the degree of the technology, of course.
So, and Tim, you grew up with the technology?
Kind of, yeah.
So I think you knew what you're investing in. So what I'm asking myself is when you have deep tech, so the due diligence, so you know you need time. You send experts to, maybe they understand it, hopefully, but experts working with more experts. So how hard is it to value what you're investing in, to decide you're investing into a deep tech startup?
Well, it's, of course, somehow you have to do the work also on your own. You have to read a lot, to talk a lot to the team. And I learned very quickly to ask closed questions, okay? Because if you send an open question, then after one sentence, okay, it's over. So then it's getting very deep. And so you try to understand the simple basics behind this. And all the rest, you are just, somehow trust them that they are able to do this work. So my aim is much more, okay, can this really have a success in the market? And what is needed for this? How big is the market? What are the competitors doing? And try to understand this, if this is really able to be a successful startup. This is my task, more or less.
Similar here. I mean, we have an expert sitting here, the founder. Yeah, you can kind of research his publications in that case, right? So it gives you a little bit of an indication if Franz is legit or not legit, yeah. But in the end, it's somehow trust, yeah? And really, you try to understand, like you just did in your question, like, what can you use it for? So we understood now that you can use it for molecules within the body, you know, and how they move, and possibly get some medical solutions for that later on, yeah?
So the relation is more, especially based on trust, because you don't have the figures yet. You have to take your time.
Yeah, you're doing a research, analyzing the market. Where is the trend going? Can this technology apply there? And and is in the front of the competitors.
Right. So initially it was really the scientific market on the free electron lasers worldwide, which is a limited market. But then we also went into European Space Agency. Timing there is also a problem. Okay, and now we have also commercial customers which start to buy our products. And one can see a growth trajectory. So it becomes easier to judge.
Yeah.
I mean, it leads to something.
And at the beginning, they had already contracts, I guess. You started with that.
Exactly. So also the one convincing argument was we started already with a customer.
Okay, yeah.
Who wanted to have $1 million system.
Oh, that's okay. Good. That's good to have.
Not one little.
But there's always a lot of trust component in venture capital, because you don't buy the whole company, you invest in it, get a relatively small share in the company at first. Yeah, you don't have a controlling interest. You also don't want a controlling interest because the founder is the entrepreneur and he should run the whole company. So as an investor, you do need to have some trust in the founders to hopefully grow your money.
And how was it for you as a founder and a scientist then to fundraising, to fundraise?
Well, to some extent, it's not too different from being a professor, right? You always have to fundraise. The goals are different. So in science, of course, you want to have an impact in science, but here you want to have an impact in the market. So actually, to some extent, it's not so different, okay? But of course, the details are then very different. But the overall strategy is not so different. You want to have impact somewhere, because otherwise, why do you anything at all? And actually, the nice thing here is about that it can have impact in the market, but actually it also has impact in science, because we equip all FELs worldwide with our timing system. That's also an achievement, okay? So, and it feeds back into science. And it gives us the opportunity to have these people around here and develop that technology further and use it again in our research. Okay, give stability to the whole environment in various ways. And that's also what Hamburg wants to see, to have innovation here, right? To build something up.
It's a win-win-win situation. Would you do anything different in fundraising when you look back, when maybe you will found again with another product, with another idea or whatever?
That is true, but actually I think it was the right way. We had at the beginning a little bit of a struggle with leadership team, okay? That happens. But otherwise, I think it was the right way. Maybe having more time getting the right initial group together would have helped, especially inside the company, okay? But that was really a little bit under time pressure, because we had now this customer, okay? And there were alternatives for this customer, also not many, okay? But we had to act within a reasonable time frame.
How do you handle the management or the initial team? So what was the problem?
Exactly. The initial team is, we started with my coworker, Damian, and he struggled in leading the team after a while when it grew. Okay, and so we needed to find a solution, and then I had to run it for a while, for 5 years, and that was stressful.
I can imagine.
Okay, because it was on spare time. I'm still, my main job was the scientist. But I think we overcome it, and thanks to our investors. Right, there were also, along these 5 years, there were difficult times like Corona. Mm. Also, that was very important that we had the city on our side in terms of IFB. But we managed through, and I think we have a good growth record now, and we have to keep going. And since 5 years, we have a CEO, and I can be a little bit more.
That's good. How many people working in the company?
Now 30, roughly.
It's a huge team already.
Yeah, so it's not just a small, it can grow. Hopefully, it keeps the trajectory.
Did you help you two by organizing the team, the management team, or just were advising?
Well, we do help with finding C-level functions, basically. The current CEO, basically, I knew him from before, so I introduced him to Franz, and that's how he ended up here. Yeah, I think that's one thing where we can actually help, not so much then in choosing the person, but yeah. But we're only a small part in the team. Like, it's more the founders and the other employees working here in the company. We investors normally come and stay a little bit more on the outside.
What makes it easy, I think, for everybody. But as an advisor, I think it's interesting and helpful if we have somebody to talk to and to see, okay, what can I do if I'm a scientist and now I have to lead a startup, a growing startup. Was it hard for you to shift your role a little bit from a scientist to an entrepreneur? Or did you just learn it by doing it?
No, it was, I think it wasn't too much. I mean, because especially when you work at MIT, you have to bring in all your money. Okay, you have nothing permanent. That's also a reason why being here. Okay, so you had already this management style, bringing money in, having a group and running it, and that helped a lot to get into that mode, I would say.
And just go a little bit back. The one you said you had the customer, Chinese customer. When did you decide was now also ready from lab to the real world?
So
another lab, bigger lab.
To be completely honest, we started it already when I was in the US. We had already a relationship, but I was not so involved. So we hoped that somebody else is doing it. We just collaborated. But it was too early. So the market was not yet here because it was not yet demonstrated in a big lab. Mm-hmm. So for 5 years, it went so idle. And then once it was implemented here in the DAISY facilities and people saw, oh, it's actually working, okay, on a larger style. And also we helped implementing it in other facilities. Once that came, this Chinese customer showed up. Because China then decided to build also three free electron lasers according to the size of the country. And yeah, they wanted to have that.
So you needed as well the trust of an early adopter as a DAISY to say, okay, that helps.
Sounds great.
Looks great. We will use it and build it for, I don't know, what the product costs and what the, how do you, do, how, just how big are the lasers? What are we talking about?
Oh, the laser itself is a little shoebox sized.
Okay.
But then for the large facilities, the timing system itself, that can cover at least for even a minimum system covers a whole optical table, 150 meter wide, 3 meter long, with a rack on side, which is basically one of these, like a computer tower, 2 meter high. That is a system which then delivers something like 8 or 16 links, keeping various places in that facility stable.
And what are your strategic goals for the next years? So will you try to make it smaller, usability for, you said, was it airspace?
Right. So we have not only these FEL facilities, we have also European Space Agency. They don't want to have large tables because the facilities are not large. So everything has to go into these rack towers, okay? And then they are also interested to bring it on a satellite. And then it has to be really small. So we have to integrate those components with integrated optics, okay, making everything small. And then you also reach other customers like equipment makers for the telecom industry. They want to have more precise microwave signals, more precise optical measurement technique. But it also needs to get in smaller boxes. So basically, miniaturizing our concepts, which we demonstrated in large facilities, and making it into measurement equipment and maybe at one point in communication devices. Okay, but it needs to get smaller and integrated. And then it can also reach larger markets.
And it will make communication way more faster.
Exactly. To bring up the communication rate. Yes.
Even faster internet? So then I can relate to it, like, okay.
In principle, yes, because actually at the moment there is just a push for actually putting more of the communication over space and not any longer over a fiber system on the ground. And then it actually, if it goes into the satellite systems, yes. Yeah. So it can help to make the internet faster. But there's still a way to go.
Yeah. We can talk about that in 10 years.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. Maybe I'll just take a look at the time. It was great to round up our little talk. A question to all of three of you. What piece of advice would you give to scientists, maybe out of the deep tech, with trying to become entrepreneurs, to build a startup? From your view as an investor advisor, from your side as an investor, and your role as a scientist entrepreneur, maybe Tim, you start.
Sure. Think about the problems of the customers. You probably have a great product, anyways, but think about the applications of the products. Which problem is really being solved with your product for the customer? And go from that side out. I see a lot of founders that have a great product, but they don't know how to market it. They don't really know what it's for. That's my advice.
Yeah, my advice would be in the same direction as Tim said, strictly be focused on the product market fit. Because scientists, they are always thinking about new approaches, and I don't know how many ideas we talked in the past, but just to find out the right customer with the right problem and go to this product market fit to verify this and then build a strategy on it and just implement this and execute this.
Yeah, so I think these are all very helpful comments. So focusing on something which you can do, okay? That's also sometimes in our team a question, should we go in this direction, that direction, that direction? Especially since I have a research group in the back too, okay, which produces tons of different results. And actually, in the beginning, we had other ideas in which directions we could go, high-energy lasers, right, which is not quite there yet, okay? So we went really into this timing market. But I think we have sort of found a good balance of not putting all the thing on one product because the environment also changes. Okay, you think you develop only this, and in 10 years from now, this will have the impact. This might not happen. So I think we have a right selection at the moment.
I think that's a good end. So thank you very much. Franz, Tim, and Genta for your time and for sharing these insights.
Yeah.
Thank you
very
much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.